Okay, this is the first week of Rabbeinu Bechai Al HaTorah. What we're going to do here is go through the Rabbeinu Bechai's on the Parshas HaShavua. I should, I guess, add a note right at the beginning. I'm going to call him Rabbeinu Bechai, even though that's not the officially correct pronunciation. Neither is Meseches Yuma the correct pronunciation. It's Yoma and so what. Most people say Rabbeinu Bechai, so that's what I'm going to say. Even though the correct pronunciation is Rabbeinu Bachya, that's fine. We're still going to call him Rabbeinu Bachya. Anyway, so we're going to go through the Rabbeinu Bachya's on the Parsha, and obviously not every one, but just go through the ones, I guess, that jump out at me. There are some Rabbeinu Bachya's that just are quoting Gemaras. I'm not going to do those too much, because it's not really Rabbeinu Bachya, more than he's just pointing out that there's a Gemara. But we'll go through the runs that, like I said, jumped out at me. And you're welcome to look up anything you want afterwards. But the goal of this really is to let you, if you don't have time on your own, generally, to go through all the Rabbeinu Bechai's in the Parsha, so you can listen to this. And then you'll have a pretty good overview of the things that have been said, or at least a lot of them. Okay, as you probably know, Rabbeinu Bechai starts every single Parsha with a pasuk from Mishlei, and then a little musarvard about that, which segues into the Parsha. So I'll just say a little bit from that, and the pasuk he starts off with is, Shemen uktaris yismach chalev, mesek reyo meatzis nefesh, that the shemen, the oil, and the ketoris gladden the heart. So he says that what Shlomo means by that is that when Hashem created the world, it says, Yismach Hashem b'masav. When Hashem finished creating the world, Hashem was happy with his creation. So he said the Mishkan is similar to that. The Mishkan was like a mini creation of the world, or at least as important. And therefore, when he finished the Mishkan, because if you see it, the Ketoros and the Shem, right, the Ketoros comes at the end of the Parsha, which he discusses at the end of the Parsha, but the Ketoros is the last thing. The Shechina was only shown in the Beis HaMikdash after the Ketoros was brought. The hadlaka of the menorah comes at the same time as the ketoros. So those two things that finished it off. So that's why that gladdened Hashem's heart too, because it's the creation of the Mishkan was similar to the creation of the world. He doesn't say the following words exactly, but I understand him to mean, just like Hashem created the world, that he should have a Jewish people. Well, actually, he does say there, the Rabbeinu Bechai says that at the end of the creation of the world, Hashem created mankind. And that was, he needed someone to be miyachid shemo, to serve him. So at the end, we have the Kohen Gadol, who's there to be miyachid shemo. And just like the world is, in a certain sense, Hashem as a dira batachtonim through Klal Yisrael, and however Hashem connects to this world, Hashem also has a dira batachtonim in the Mishkan. So anyway, so they both made Hashem happy, so to speak. And he explains that the shemen used in the menorah was a shemen zayis, because that brought light into the world. Because we find that was the when Noach sent out the bird, that's what it came back with. Hine ali zayis teraf befia. So we use the shem that was an olive branch that brought back to say the world is around again. So we use that in the menorah. And he also points out from the Medrash Tanchuma that the general minig in the world, the custom is, right, that when you have oil, if you have lower grade oil and higher grade oil, and you have two options, you need to light a lamp in your house, and you need to make challahs. So would you use the higher level oil for the lamp or for the challahs? Obviously, you'd want your food to taste good, and you could burn whatever you want. So a human being, if they have two grades of oil, you'd use the best stuff for the challahs, and the garbage to light the fire, to light the lamp, to give light. In the menorah, the Medrash points out, it is not that way, right? Because the best oil goes for the menorah, which is to give light. And the lower level goes for the menachos, which you eat. The Medrash does not give an explanation, and neither does Rabbeinu Bechai. I assume, again, obviously, because it's for the Ribbono Shel Olam, the spiritual is the ikkar, the light is the main thing. But he does point that out, that's based on the Medrash. And the last thing from that pasuk, which is fascinating, that'd be the first pasuk in the parsha, that it says, "Ve'ata tetaves es bnei Yisrael, v'ikhu elecha shemen zayis zach kasis lamor." So you use this shemen zayis for the maor, the best oil for the maor, but he uses the word kasis lamaor. So the Rabbeinu Bachai says that that word kasis, ground up, chopped up, whatever. So that, he says, that is a hint to the two based Batei Mikdash. Because kasis, the first base of Mikdash lasted 410 years. Second base of Mikdash lasted 420 years. So the Saf Yud is the 410. The Chaf Saf, 420. Those are the two Batei Mikdashes that are hinted to in that world. And it's ground chopped up because they would be destroyed eventually. But there's a Haftacha about the third base of Mikdash, that will be La Ma'or La Los Ner Tamid. That base of Mikdash will last forever. Okay, so that's the first thing he says at the beginning of the Parsha. I guess I should add the way the La Ma'or hints to the third base of Mikdash is because of the Pasuk Kumi Ori Kiva Orech, which is in the future and when the base of Mikdash is eventually rebuilt, so that'll be La Los Ner Tamid. Okay. Again, like I said, we're not going to go through the Gemara as he quotes. In other words, it talks about the Big Day Kahuna. So the Gemara in Erechin on Daf Tazayin discusses that the Big Day Kahuna were there to be a kapara for various Averas, but that's just a quote of the Gemara in Erechin Tazayin. You can look there if you want, but that's, again, just a quote of a Gemara. What is unique to the Rabbeinu Bachai is his explanation of the stones. This week's parish has quite a lot about the stones that were on the Choshen. So the Rabbeinu Bachai has a long explanation of why each Shevet got the stone that they got and what was written on each stone. So we know the names of the Shvatim were written on each stone. But besides that, it also said Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Shivtei Yeshurun. So the way it was engraved on the stone is, he says, it would say Reuven Aleph on stone number one. The next one would say Shimon Beis. The stone to the left of it would say Shimon Beis. And then the stone to the left of that would say Levi Resh Hei Mem. So you got Reuven, Shimon, Levi, but you also have Avraham spelled out. Aleph and Reuven, a Beis next to Shimon, and Resh Hei Mem next to Levi. And the same going down the line, so that each stone would have six letters on it. That was the point. You'd have it set up so that each stone would have six letters on it. Of course, that leaves Binyamin having no letters other than Binyamin. The point was that it should each have six letters for a total of 72 letters. And 72 letters, as we all, is, of course, a remez to the Shema Mefarash, and also to the 72 hours that Hashem created the world in, because there were 6 days, and Hashem created during the day. So 6 times 12, 72. So there were 72 hours that Hashem created the world, 72 letters on the Choshen, and 72 letters in the Shame of Hashem. And that is hinted to, he says, in the Pasuk, Olam Chesed Yibana, the Gematria of Chesed is 72. And that's to let you know that the world exists, Bezchus, the Shvatim that are on the Ephod. Okay, a nice remez. So now he says that the stones, each stone that each Shevet got was with special to that Shevet. It wasn't just like random pretty stones. Each Shevet got a stone with the color that was appropriate for that Shevet's color. Colors are relevant. It's an interesting thing in all of Hashkafa, all of the Torah. The colors are very relevant. The red is always Midas Adin, white is Chesed, typically. Different colors have different, represent different things. So each Shevet got the color that fits them, and the stone that fits them for different reasons. And he goes through each Shevet, what stone they had. So we'll go through some, not every single Shevet, but we'll go through some. Okay, so let's start with Reuven. So Reuven's stone was the ruby, which is red. And that's because Reuven was embarrassed about the story of Bilhah. So because of that embarrassment or whatever, that's hinted to in the redness of the ruby. Also red, like we mentioned, is Midas Adin, and for whatever reason Reuven is a hint to that. I don't know why. I'm not a Kabbalist, so I don't know, but I'm just telling you that's what he says. And he also says that, well, you know the story with Reuven and the Dudaim, right? Reuven, he brought the Dudaim, which were whatever it was, this herb that helped women get pregnant, according to some. So the stone, the ruby, that's Reuven's stone, is the stone that is known as an Evan Tekuma, which is a woman who has trouble giving birth or needs help giving birth. It makes it that a woman won't miscarry. It has a segula. It's not a guarantee, obviously, but it's a segula. This ruby, if a woman wears it, that she won't miscarry. It's good for pregnancy. So that's why his stone is a ruby. He also adds, which is fascinating, that if you crush it up, it works like dudaim. If you would crush it up, a ruby, and sprinkle some in your, ice cream, and have it, it would work to help a woman get pregnant. Okay? That's what he says. So that's the ruby for Reuven. Shimon had a green stone, and that was because it seems from the things he says that Taiva is somehow connected to green. But the story was Zimri, what Zimri did, who was the head of Shevet Shimon, that his face turned green from the Avera that was done there. So that's why his stone is green. Levi's stone was Barekes, which is a carbuncle, a lot of Rabbeinu B'chai is very interesting. A lot of Rabbeinu B'chai, when he says things in Laz, a lot of them are English. Carbuncle is the word we use today. If you want to look up a carbuncle stone, you can look it up. A carbuncle is a precious stone. That's a stone, that's Barekes, the Rabbeinu B'chai says. And it's a reddish stone, typically. Also, Levi's Midas Adin. But also, according to Rabbeinu B'chai, this is the stone that Noah hung in the Tevar. In other words, it shined. And it was as if it had its own light. I don't know if he says it's like it's had its own light. But if you remember right, Noach put a jewel in his teva, which and somehow made its own light in some way. This is the same similar thing, because Levi came, Moshe came from him, Moshe Rabbeinu, and the whole Shevet Levi in general is a remez to the teachers of Torah. So, which gives off light. So that's the idea of Shevet Levi, gives off light, gives off the light of Torah. So its stone is that carbuncle, which is somehow in some way gives off its own light. Yehuda's stone was an emerald, which is green. And it's a similar issue with Tamar, that whole story where he was embarrassed with the Maisa's Sinus. Or almost, no, whatever, that story of Busha with Tamar. Yisachar, interestingly, had the sapphire, which was blue. Why was it blue? Because, again, Yisachar was the Lomei Torah. Now, he doesn't say this. This is my understanding. The way he describes it is Levi is kind of described as the teacher of Torah. Yisachar may have also taught, but he's more seems to be described as the learner of Torah. So he's the Luchos were made out of blue, out of sapphire. So Yisachar's stone is sapphire. And also, the Rebbeinu B'chai says that the neshamas of the Talmidei Chachamim are under the Kisya Kavod, which is bluish. So that's why his stone is blue. Just skipping to Yosef, whose stone was, I believe it's pronounced onyx, Shoham. So he says that's Osios of Hashem. And just like Yosef was Nosechein with everybody, yeah, right, it says the shame of Hashem was with him, and he was found favor in everybody's eyes. So Rabbeinu B'chai says the fascinating thing, that if you want to have people accept what you say, wear an onyx stone. It has that segula, and it makes it that people will more likely listen to what you're saying. So it's a good business thing if you go into negotiations, I guess. Wear some onyx. He also mentions, I should say, that we said Binyamin had... the Binyamin who had the stone Yashvi, his name was spelled out with nothing else there, because that's six letters right there. Rabbeinu B'chai says the reason why his name was written on the stone with nothing else, that's because he was almost completely destroyed in the time of Pilagesh Begiva, and his name was spelled out Mali with all the yuds, right, because Binyamin can be spelled with one yud or two yuds. It's spelled out Mali with the full six letters, so that he shouldn't be completely wiped out. Okay, he ends off this whole thing with the stones by quoting Aristotle, of all people, saying that the segulas of these stones, about whether it helps you get pregnant or whether it helps you not miscarry or whether it helps you be smart. I forgot to mention that. It says by Levi's stone, which is the carbuncle that gives off a shine, if you were to grind that up and put it in your ice cream, it would help for brains, like make you smarter. So some of these he mentions has a segula while you wear it. It helps. Some of them it sounds like you grind it up and eat it. But whatever it is, these different segulas work better when you're tahor, like they're segula type things. So he says that they are more effective if the person wearing them is tahor. And he says that from Aristotle, and says he agrees. Makes sense. Okay. Anyway, Moving on to the next point, by the Mishpatos, the Mishpatos over on the top by the on the ephod, they had the two stones, and you had a there was a gold plate in or gold holder. You stuck the jewel in the in that golden holder. These, again, the two stones at the top of the ephod. So you had the gold holder, the stone that you put in it, and on the stone was engraved six shvatim on each stone. So he said that that's a hisoros Torah, because what's the most precious thing? Is it gold or precious stone? So he says precious stones are more better than gold. So there's the gold is the lower level. On top of that is the precious stone, and on top of that are the osios, to let you know that the Torah is dicker. Okay. As far as the Urim v'Tumim, so when he's discussing the Urim v'Tumim, he mentions that the way you would ask a question, now remember, the people, you couldn't just, it wasn't just anybody could go ask the Urim v'Tumim, we know, in case you don't know. The Urim v'Tumim, you would, the way it, were, it was something that the Kohen Gadol was wearing, the Urim v'Tumim, had the Shem Hashem in the Choshen, and when you wanted to know something, so you would ask the Kohen Gadol, and he would know the answer, the lights would, the letters of, on the stones would light up, and he would know through Ruach HaKodesh, the Kohen Gadol would know what Hashem is answering your question, and he would let you know. So this, the letters on the stones would light up, and he would, the Kohen Gadol would tell you what they mean. So the only people who could ask questions were either a melech, a king, or if it was a question on behalf of the tzibur. You didn't go to the Kohen Gadol to ask where you left your keys. Yes, there was only for questions for the tzibur or for the king. But how did you ask this question? So the so he says, you would stand, the Kohen Gadol would stand in front of you, you stand behind the Kohen Gadol, and you would ask the question in a whisper, like you're davening Shemona Esrei. This sounds like you don't say it like loud. It was something you would like whisper quietly, which is almost like a tefillah, asking the question. And only then the Kohen Gadol would get through Ruach HaKodesh, you would find out the answer through the Urim v'Tumim. Okay, another point when he's discussing the begadim, the Kohen Gadol, so we know the Kohen Gadol had these bells on him at the bottom of his cloak, and that was to let, he explains the purpose of that was is to let everyone, to let it be known when he's going into the, to do the avoda. So he says the purpose of these bells were because when the Kohen Gadol is going in to do his avoda, we're afraid that the he's connecting to higher things, and we were afraid that the malachim would hurt him. So the noise is to let the malachim know it's time for you to leave now, to leave Hashem, so to speak. And, well, I don't know what that means, to leave Hashem, and that the Kohen Gadol goes in and does his avoda. And then when he leaves, they hear the noise of him leaving so that they know they should return back, the malachim should return back to their places once the Kohen Gadol leaves. But that's the point of the noise, besides the Derech Eretz thing we all know. It's also to let the Malachim know the Kohen Gadol is coming, they should leave, so that this way the Kohen Gadol doesn't get hurt. And what's interesting, I guess I never thought about this, is that the on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol, you know, does not wear that. He wears the four begadim, the big day lavan, which don't have any bells. And that's when he's going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. I mean, the rest of the, when he's doing the regular avoda of the day, he uses his shmona begadim, the eight begadim that the Kohen Gadol always wears. But when he's going in to do the avoda lefnayv lefnim, he doesn't wear any bells. So, and you would think if he's going to get hurt by malachim, that'd be a good time. But anyway, he says that the Rabbeinu Bachai says that that was the special ava that Hashem is showing to Klal Yisrael on Yom Kippur, that the Kohen Gadol walks in a sense, without rishos. There's no bells. Okay. He also mentions that on the tzitz, it said Kodesh Lashem with Lashem on top and Kodesh on the bottom, and that the Ravid disagrees and says that it would say Kodesh on the top line but towards the end, and Lashem on the second line but towards the beginning. So in that way, you don't have the, you have it spelled, you have it that you could read it normally Kodesh Lashem, but that it's not the Kodesh being on top of Lashem. And in other words, because it says that the Kodesh is supposed to be Lamata, it's Lamata in the sentence at the end of the sentence. Okay, he also points out that the eight begunim of the Kohen Gadol are really not eight, because the tzitz is not a beged, it's a tachshit, it's a type of jewelry. There are really only seven begunim of the Kohen Gadol, And when Chazal say eight, that they're going Basarov, the last one's not really a Begad, but it's saying that those seven Begadim are connected to seven heavens and Shemayim. Anyway, there's a lot of Rabbeinu Bechai that's Kabbalah that I don't know, but I'm just mentioning the things, words that are written there. He also points out something, I guess if you think about it, is kind of strange. He says it's a Pella that this is all the Kohanim wore. When they did the Avoda, they wore either four Begadim if you're a regular Kohen, eight Begadim if you're the Kohen Gadol. Imagine you're a regular Kohen, you wear these four Begadim in February. Let's say it's snowing outside in Yerushalayim, which doesn't happen too often, but it happens. And you're barefoot, and you have these four Begadim, which are just, a shirt. How did they not die? He just writes that as a Pella that they didn't die. And the Mishnah says, which he quotes, that they had a doctor for them because they ate a lot of meat while barefoot. But the fact that they did not die was just an amazing that this is what they were able to only wear these Begadim in the winter. I guess just to end off, he says, he quotes that the Shir Shel Yom that we say every day that was said in the Beis HaMikdash is connected what was created that day. Some of the Shir Shel Yom are more obvious than others. I guess the easiest one is the Shir Shel Yom HaShabbos that we know. But the day of Friday, Hashem Malach Geres Levesh, that's when there was Hashem created man. So then Hashem had someone to rule over. And on the Yom Chamishi, where it mentions that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, he says because Paro was similar to a tanin, and tanins were created on the fifth day. Again, as I said, they're not all so obvious, but it's interesting to see. And then just last, he ends off, the last thing he discusses is the Ketores, because that's at the end of the Parsha. So he mentions that the Rambam's version in Mora Nevuchim, why we bring the Ketores, again is a nice smelling thing, is because they were chopping up animals in there, and it smelled so terribly, so that's why he had the Ketores. The Ramban, of course, says it, that's Pikabola, what the Ketores did, is it's remez to the Midas Adin, and it could do all kinds of whatever Kabbalistic things there were that the Ketores was forged. The Rambam B'chai says, of course, the Ramban is right. The Rambam is saying his version based on, the way he's explaining all mitzvahs in a rational way, but of course he says the Ramban is right. The Ketores is the most chashuv thing, it brings the Shefa down to us. So he just says that the reasoning of the Rambam is nice, but that's certainly not the Iker. The Iker is the Kabbalistic reason. And it's the most chashuv, and that's why it's separate at the end. Okay? That's it.